Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. July 16th, 2019. Thank you for joining me today. As always, there's so many places you could be going, so thank you for tuning in with the Daily Wrap-Up, the last American vagabond, to get your daily dose of what's really going on. Now, before I jump into all this other stuff, I wanted to quickly note on something. People have been reaching out, you know, asking why haven't I covered this or that, which is, there's always going to be something that I probably won't get to or decide is more or less important than other things going on. But there have been a lot of bills passing the House about Khashoggi, about Saudi Arabia, about Yemen, Iran, even Iraq, about ending these fields of war, basically war in general in a lot of ways. There's a lot of different things passing the House, but remember, they still have to pass the Senate. Then they have to pass the veto desk, which, you know, the potential veto from the president, which, you know, kind of a insight into how flimsy the system that we think we have really is, that's potentially the way it is. But recognize that these things are very important. But I've gotten kind of tired over the years of reporting on bills that pass the House or the Senate and then end up floundering and going nowhere else, recognizing the same thing carries on over and over. Call me pessimistic, but I simply base it on the history that we're looking at. But recognize these things are important, and I may touch on them here and there, but what's most important is action, what really comes of these things, and if they really pass, and if they actually believe in them. That's what we will have to cover. But it's very important to see that even the congressional system try to buck the executive branch, it shows you that things are kind of changing and maybe hopefully going back to the way that they're actually supposed to be, you know, where the people actually have a say in their government. But we'll have to wait and see. But for all those things, we'll wait and see if they actually pass all of Congress and they actually pass Trump's desk. And then we'll potentially report on them. But today we're going to get into the story of the mysterious disappearing UAE tanker that the UAE has not said anything about, but the US has already came over the top and said Iran probably did it. And guess what? Surprise, nothing to support that claim other than them saying so anonymously to one person at CNN. Interesting how that always seems to be the case. The US apparently ready to deal with Iran, pretending like, oh, it's all their idea, when just a couple days ago they've been saying that we're ready to deal as long as you make concessions. Now the U.S. is reframing this as something they're doing, when in fact it seems like they're kind of limping to the table for a deal here, but we'll have to see how it plays out. Israel now suing the United Nations. Why? Because they did not violate the JCPOA. We'll get into that. Israel prepping war with Iran, of course, right in the open, saying this is an absolute inevitability. Than the U.S. telling us otherwise, which is always the way it goes. Don't listen to what the Israeli government says themselves. Trust what the U.S. government has to say about what they want to do. This is what they actually want Americans to do. Don't ignore that they're saying they want war. Ignore that they think Palestinians are all terrorists and animals and don't deserve life. No, forget that they said that. Trust what your government tells you they actually want. This is the reality that we live in today. But to begin with, a very quick story I want to touch on that I think is... it's just a perfect... add to a long line of fake news and calling out the mainstream media that we've been doing for so long. It's not even necessary anymore, I argue, other than for the people that are still lost. But we need to begin to see how either incompetent or dishonest the vast majority of mainstream media are today. And that's not an accident. It's because it's been cultivated to where they're malleable. They're pliable. They can be controlled by a control-focused government. But for this first story, a quick overview of another incident of fake news coming primarily from CNN and BBC. I'm completely shocked. This coming from South Front, entitled Arranging the Narrative. Mainstream media outlets in rush to hide links of Nazis detained in Italy with pro-Kiev forces in eastern Ukraine. Now, right off the bat, we have to recognize how long we have been talking about Ukraine and the obvious fascist neo-Nazi government that was put in place by the U.S. illegal regime change. There's no denying this. I mean, this is exactly the same thing I just talked about with Israel, where the U.S. will say, no, don't listen to what their government's actually saying. Believe what we tell you they want to do. It's the same thing with the Ukraine. We can see photos and with, you know, Nazi patches and them saluting and the Nazi saluting. I mean, everything, they're obviously neo-Nazi government. This is a neo-Nazi focused government. The U.S. is well aware of this. They chose to tap into them just like they've tapped into other terrorist groups and other locations in order to, you know, ostensibly control the country. So recognize that these are verifiable neo-Nazis. Now, this story is funny because of the fact that it came out where it looks like they could sell the story as Nazis working with Russia. Oh my God, and it went everywhere. Guess what? They made a little mistake, though. Turns out they were working against him. And it was the opposite of their story. Of course, that makes it look very clear that it's the Ukraine-focused U.S.-backed government that are the actual Nazis, not Russia like they want you to, like the story's meant to look like. But basically, yesterday, the Italian state police arrested a number of neo-Nazis, which is true, who had fought against the Russian-supported separatists in Ukraine. That's the truth. That's what really happened. The police found their large weapon cache. The arrest became international news because of the haul included apparently a complete French air-to-air missile that was originally delivered to Qatar. Now, Mark Ames, among many others, actually, this morning noted that the reporting about the case seemed to actually contradict Italian police statements, which it absolutely did. The BBC, CNN, basically came out and said the exact opposite, which was very confusing for a lot of people. And then, interestingly, they then changed their reporting. Even the police report changed its statements to kind of make this weird story kind of become very ambiguous and seemingly kind of then cohesive, but not. But the point being that mainstream media, even the police involved, seemed to change their statements in order to try to make this fit what they originally had said, even though they were flat out wrong. The BBC, the CNN reports, as well as the police statements, have all changed. Fortunately, all of them were saved multiple times by places like archive.org. But at the end of the day, if you want to dig into the story more, because there's a lot in this story, there is a lot of contradiction. There is a lot of, I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous fake news. They got wrong, tried to hide it, tried to cover it up, tried to sell you a story they thought they could use to make Russia look bad. Turns out they were wrong from the get-go. And then instead of saying, oh, whoops, we made a mistake in our rush to make Russia look bad and didn't do our due diligence, instead of saying, our bad, here's the truth, they just quietly changed the line and didn't even change it to the truth, mind you. They just changed it to where it was so ambiguous that you couldn't tell which way they were saying it. That is the mainstream media today. That is what we're dealing with. It should shock you and it should offend you and it should make you wake the hell up and start watching anything other than mainstream media, including them for all that, but make sure you watch independent sources today. It's so incredibly important. And we've talked about this with the North Korea story, and these things keep happening. And who's the fake news again? I mean, even if it's not, again, it's either incompetence or dishonesty. There's really no other ways you can look at it. Either way, why would you choose to watch groups that are willing to do this? Everybody makes mistakes, mind you, but it's how you handle those mistakes afterward that show you what kind of person you are, what kind of morals you have, how honorable you are. Very clearly, with the way they handled this story, they've got none of them. And we have to begin to recognize that. Now, again, the link's in the show notes. Dive through it. There's a lot more information than I covered. I just wanted to bring you the basic outliner of what this story is. Obviously, the ties to Ukraine and Russia. There's a lot we could get into there, which I've touched on in the past. But that being said, consider that story. Consider this. And all the other fake news incidents that we've talked about in regard to the mainstream media coverage of the blunder that was the U.S. attempts to again illegally overthrow the legitimate government of Venezuela, or the blunder that is the renewed U.S. effort to illegally overthrow the government of Iran. And think about all the things that have come up and happened and continually have yet to be proven. And contrast that with what we just saw. Now, would the mainstream media blindly go along with the U.S. narrative? Of course they would. They'd make this overwhelmingly obvious. So then we should immediately begin to question the claims of governments, including, I mean, all of them, but specifically about things like Iran, about Venezuela, about their efforts to illegally create wars, to illicitly steal resources and do many other things they're always doing. Now, for the next story, and this is the big one that is, again, interestingly, not getting a lot of attention. And I think it's because this story is fizzling out because people can see how ridiculous these governments truly are right now. But another tanker has apparently disappeared. But it's a weird, again, kind of almost, again, guess what? I know you know what's coming. It looks like another non-event propaganda. We haven't yet. We have to wait and see how it plays out because all of a sudden the ship could just show up or the UAE could chime in later and say, yeah, it was all Iran. But right now, it seems that this tanker has kind of just disappeared. The UAE is silent on it. And the U.S. blames Iran. I'm sure you saw that coming. with nothing other than, well, it looks like something's happening. I bet it's Iran, right? That's about the extent to which the U.S. knows what's going on. But this is what they're willing to do. They don't care about facts and evidence. If something seems a little amiss, let's just go ahead and float the idea that Iran's doing bad things somewhere so we all can consider that it might be them, which in one way or another will help bolster the U.S. agenda. That's what this is about. This is, you know, the people are calling it a mystery. The so-called mystery UAE tanker that's gone missing in the Persian Gulf. It seems very odd to me, one, why the UAE wouldn't speak up and say something about it. Now, its location transmission signal was turned off on Sunday. We talked about these signals a lot over the last month in regard to, you know, it being malicious or, you know, with the drones and how they're using it, knowing that the other people will see it, but what it will do is draw attention to it, that they're doing something nefarious. But all of a sudden, this transmission signal was turned off, or rather just went off, whether we know it was turned off or, you know, shut off by somebody else, we don't really know. But the signal was turned off Sunday as it apparently or reportedly drifted toward Iranian waters, which I guess you could know by simply the GPS. And it hasn't been heard from since, which is odd to me. This is Sunday we're talking about, right? So no one seems to care enough to figure out what's going on. The people on the ship, where's them? I mean, this story seems like there's something we should be more so than usual skeptical about. That it hasn't been heard from since it drifted, they claim, into Iranian waters with the transponder off. And even the UAE, where they claim this is their ship, they claim, have been staying completely silent about it. Now, the Associated Press reports, quote, tracking data shows an oil tanker based in the United Arab Emirates traveling through the Strait of Hormuz, that it drifted into Iranian waters and stopped transmitting its location over 2 days ago, raising concerns today, which, again, felt like you should maybe be concerned 24 hours, 36 hours. No, we're going to wait until Tuesday, raising concerns Tuesday about its status and amid heightened tensions between Iran and the U.S. Again, you know, you can just tensions that the U.S. is completely stoking based on fake information. Now, the report details that the Raya, I believe, a 58-meter oil tanker, which operates frequently in this area, had switched off its transponder for the first time in 3 months after 11 p.m. on Saturday. This is, of course, based on the tracking data, which can potentially be manipulated, but at this point, we have no reason to assume that. Now, as of Monday, yesterday, red flags were raised as U.S. officials began inquiring of the Raya's status, which maybe I'm not aware of how these things normally operate, but I think it was immediately suspicious that the U.S. all of a sudden was concerned about a ship of the UAE. Maybe they normally are, but I thought I'd point that out. You know, I doubt they'd be concerned about a missing Syrian ship, so I know that their UAE is an ostensible ally, but it seems odd that they would immediately step up and say, hey, what's going on with your ship? Suggest something to me. Now, of course, CNN's Pentagon correspondent, the fabulous Barbara Starr, had this to say based on intelligence sources, right? The CNN has learned that U.S. intel increasingly believes, which means they don't know. Thank you, Barbara Starr, for that ridiculous, right off the bat. U.S. increasingly believes that the UAE tanker, the Raya, was forced into Iranian waters over the weekend by the Revolutionary Guard Naval Forces. So how can you increasingly believe that they were forced into it? Why does that even make sense? Either they were forced into it because you have evidence of that, or you have no idea what you're talking about. This is them floating a fabricated idea based on a non-event. For all we know, the captain's drunk and this is sitting somewhere in a cove, and they're making this entire story up because they want to demonize Iran. And when this all fizzles out and nothing ultimately happens, we need to revisit this and recognize they were making this fabricated, they were throwing this lie out in hopes that it would stick, just like all the rest of them. That they believe they were forced. I mean, that just really bothers me. That they were forced into Iranian waters, increasingly believes. It says the UAE isn't talking, which should immediately then suggest that it's maybe not what they think it is. And it says some Gulf sources say ship simply broke down, was towed by Iran. U.S. says, though, no contact with crew. Last location, Hisham Island, which is the little island right there in the strait. Now, this is most likely just another case, in a long line of cases of hawkish U.S. intelligence and defense officials hyping up a completely false threat that they've done over and over and over. Demonstrably throughout history, we can see it clearly. Documented events of lying to get us involved in exactly these kind of situations. Now, Star, the correspondent, continued based on her sources, again, says that they were possibly, and this is what's so ridiculous, when you read the whole tweet that you can see there, you start off by saying that they increasingly believe that they were forced into these waters. But then say, oh, but yeah, some of the sources that are actually there, people that were involved on the ground in that area, say that they simply broke down and they towed them, which means they did a good thing. They were happy and nice and helped them when they towed and broke down. So then why not explain why they increasingly believe the exact opposite of that? U.S. has had no contact with the crew, as it says right in her tweet, and yet here they are forcing the idea that Iran somehow involved based on absolutely nothing. I mean, that's just unbelievable to me. I mean, actually, it shouldn't be unbelievable because we see them do this over and over and over, but that it's so ridiculous, it's so flimsy, so baseless, so evidence-free, and yet they still just figured, why not? Let's just come out and point to Iran. Hey, maybe we'll be right. But we need to think about that in regard to all of the other stories we're talking about and how willing they are to just straight up lie to you. Gotta start becoming aware of this stuff, people. Now, with the next story, and we'll keep track of this and see if I feel like this is just going to end up being nothing the way it kind of seems it's playing out. But who ultimately knows? Maybe it's going to blow up and something big will happen. But the reality is, to me, it seems like the UAE would have said something if they thought there was foul play involved here. But with the next story, this is the part that Iran keeps pointing out. That even while the U.S. is lobbing baseless and irresponsible claims against Iran, out of the other side of its mouth, it pretends it wants peace. It wants negotiations. And of course, that was all their idea, right? Because the U.S. has always been wanting peace and negotiations from the very beginning, right? For the next article, coming from Zero Hedge, this one entitled, Oil Dives. As Trump says, no Iran regime change. Pompeo says they're ready to negotiate. Sure. Sure. Thanks, Pompeo. I feel like I've heard you say the exact opposite about 400 times in the last 2 weeks, but whatever. Now they're ready to negotiate. I love this picture. You can see, I almost use this for the main title. Like, you just see this loving view, the way that Pompeo is just staring bullets into the side of Trump's face. Like, clearly, I think we can see what's happening here. Pompeo's made his voice very clear. Regime change is the only thing that's even on the table in his mind for Iran. And of course, now that oil dives, and that's a huge point of importance for Trump, as it should be for this country in general, as it is now anyway, I feel like there's plenty of reasons we should go away from that. But all of a sudden now it's making him look bad. And of course, he's dragging Pompeo and Bolton along with him. But Bolton probably is too stubborn to get up and say anything. But now they're pretending they want negotiations. And oil did dive sharply today. This was after back-to-back comments, before this, but after these back-to-back comments from Donald Trump and Secretary Mike Pompeo, signaling potential de-escalation of the tensions in the region, oil sharply dropped. Now, earlier in the day, which again shows you the ridiculous correlation there between war and how this country functions, right? Oh, God forbid we should not potentially have war on the doorstep all the time. But earlier in the day, President Trump reiterated during a cabinet meeting, quote, we're not looking for regime change. By the way, you know, I don't care how often you keep saying it over and over. It doesn't matter if you keep trying to regime change, right? It's stupid to keep saying it. But then he also added, we want them out of Yemen. Which either shows me again that Trump is completely part of this illusion and deceiving everybody and lying through his teeth, or he actually thinks they're in Yemen, or he actually believes what Pompeo and Bolton are telling him. Either way is certainly possible. But you know what's absolutely for sure possible and true? That's not what's happening. Now, I've included this in the show notes, and you can read through this whole thing for yourself. And this is just one snippet of an ongoing, continual document that makes point after point after point from a U.S. ambassador to the State Department of why the Houthis are not in any way connected to Iran. As it says right here, contrary to the Republic of Yemen government, which the point is that at this time when he was writing this was the Hadi government controlled by the United States, the illegal government that was put in place by an illegal U.S. regime change coup in Yemen, who then the Yemeni people fought back and throughout because they wanted their own country back. And now that's what the U.S. and Saudis are trying to do, is force back in their regime change puppet they're doing everywhere else. But at the time when they had their fake government in place in Yemen, that's what he was saying. And this is where these claims stem from. That Hadi, the government tied directly to Al-Qaeda that the U.S. wants to put in place, was the one saying that there's ties from Iran to Houthis. And this is the ambassador in Yemen writing to the White House saying, yeah, well, contrary to what your government man says, all the reports show us that they get their weapons from the black market, including from that government themselves. So including getting their weapons from the Hadi government backed by the United States. How ridiculous is that? And then they point and say, well, Iran is giving them weapons, which I wouldn't even say is not, it's probably likely even. But the point is, in every single case here, what they're making, you can read through this document yourself. The U.S. government's own information is showing that what they're right now drilling on, that they want you to think, that their own documentation shows is in fact not true, that they found that out and just now chose to ignore it. Of course, Pompeo seated right next to Donald Trump, which again, just this, I just can't get past this image. It just, these kind of images crack me up. He said that Tehran, of course, is ready to negotiate over its missile program for the first time, he said. First of all, Tehran has been ongoing, continually saying that they're ready to negotiate if the U.S. pulls back its aggressive moves, of course, but they don't tell you that. And then is willing to negotiate its missile program for the first time. That's not at all what's happening in any way, shape, or form. Not at all. Not only is their missile program a deception of what's going on, because this is either trying to imply that they're discussing their ballistics missile program, which is not going to happen, or they're implying that they have a nuclear missile program. Either way, that is a fabrication in every sense of the word. But he knows this. This is why he carefully said it just like that. The whole JCPOA nuclear deal that they were basically forced into Iran. They've always said they've never sought a nuclear weapon. Could it be false? Of course it could. But it's actually been confirmed by the IAEA numerous times. But oh, who cares about that? Negotiating over the missile program is a lie, and he knows this. What they're willing to do is negotiate the nuclear deal, the same one, if and when the U.S. decides to stop being so aggressive. Now, Pompeo said, for the first time, the Iranians said they're ready to negotiate their program. This is his direct quote. Trump added, quote, they'd like to talk, and we'll see what happens. Right? So, yeah, they kind of want to talk, and we're going to, like, this is such a ridiculous thing to say. Just come out and say, yeah, we're going to speak with them. He has to always make it seem like they're, you know, well, we might give them their time, but they're not important. They're just barely important for us, important enough for us to consider. You know what I mean? Like, it's just that way he says it. Yeah, they'd like to talk to us, but we'll see. Maybe I'll think about it. That's just, it's childish. It's always childish. The way that he delivers these things are, it's what you would do as a kid in high school. And I'm not trying to disparage Donald Trump. I'm just saying this is the way that he conducts this stuff. And he prides himself. He thinks he's this fast-moving deal maker. Forcing these, manipulating and forcing. If you've actually read some of the things in his book, he makes it clear that the whole point is that there's nothing off the table. Lies, deceit, deception. Cheating, everything is okay as long as you get the deal. It's right there in his book. This is basically them trying to frame what's happening here. Basically frame their concession to Iran as Iran's concession, which is what they're always doing. Thank you for the super chat. They're always trying to make it seem like any negative step they have to take is in fact a win for the United States, which is just like basic rudimentary level propaganda. But in fact, this is them basically deciding to talk when they've said they never would. When Iran has always said they're willing to, as long as the U.S. is the one that makes the concession in regard to sanctions and oil. Now, the comments sent oil tumbling, of course, showing again, like I said, very clearly just how invested in perpetual war this nation's economy is. That even the brief mention that we may not be going to war drops the price. Now, I get it that they're tied to oil, but it's not just about that. It's about the fact that it's just ridiculous to see how this continually happens. This country, as I've said over and over, it runs in the blood of other nations. And that's not my opinion. That's based entirely on the way this country functions. Now, back in reality, just this week, in fact, 2 days before this, I'm sure, totally coincidental change of heart by the Trump administration, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif reiterated for like the 1,000th time that negotiations between Washington and Tehran are still possible if the Trump administration eases sanctions on the Islamic Republic. Same thing he's been saying for a long time. Now, you know, again, remember that this is Trump just said, oh, well, you know, they've reached out and they want to talk and, oh, they're finally ready to talk. So maybe we'll talk to them. No, that's not at all what's happening. Azarif told NBC Nightly News in an interview that aired Monday that they're, quote, wide open to talks if the sanctions are removed, which has always been the case, which they've maintained from the beginning. And it's simply a deception to tell you anything other than that. Now, and this is exactly the case, that Iran is ready to talk if U.S. lifts sanctions. Now, this is before, of course, Pompeo is skeptical, it says, right? Oh, because Pompeo is not on board with this, which makes it seem like right now it's obvious that this is not what he wants to happen, but he's being grudgingly dragged along. Now, this was 2 days ago. President Hassan Rouhani said that he would be ready to hold U.S. talks right now and anywhere. That's his direct quote. If the U.S. agrees to sanctions relief as a precondition, which, by the way, is actually a condition of the JCPOA. Obviously, the U.S. is no longer a signatory, but it's the same difference we're talking about here. All they want is sanctions relief. They want them to remove the illegal sanctions that are targeting their civilian population. They want to be allowed to sell oil and seek a civilian nuclear program like everybody else in the world. And the only reason they claim they're not is because of Iran, bad guy. And then when you try to digest and dig into that, all you find out is baseless claims, allegations by the United States based on absolutely nothing, that, as we know, based on U.S. history, are likely even to have been fabricated in order to carry out this agenda. Now, knowing all of that, point to where you can see that shows you why Iran is the bad guy. Proof. It's not there. And hopefully you're at least open-minded enough to recognize that. Now, of course, I'm speaking in that moment to people that may just be tuning in today, as I know plenty of you here are already aware of all the stuff we're talking about. Now, of course, at the time, when this was first put forward, 2 days ago and every other time before that he said it, the idea was immediately denounced by Mike Pompeo. Immediately. No, that's off the table. However, as he thought the idea of talks and sanctions relief was suspiciously similar to the nuclear negotiations under the Obama administration, he said that this was a disaster. But now we see what's happening, and we see how Trump has basically made him stand up 2 days later and say the exact opposite. It's got to be kind of embarrassing for Mike Pompeo. Pompeo's position has always been, just like Bolton's, to drive Donald Trump toward war with Iran. But his statement shoots a hole in that idea that the U.S. really wants a diplomatic engagement, as his objection to Rouhani's proposal is simply the very idea that talks might happen and lead to a deal, which he considers a bad result. Right? How dare we have discussions and lead to a deal? That's bad. It just shows you that they may say the opposite, but their very actions reveal the truth in what's going on, that they don't want a deal. That's not what he wants. Simple, basic deductive logic, people. Actions versus narrative. If you start just listening to what they have to say, you'll be lost in a fantasy land for the rest of your life. But after all this, here we are today. And as they embarrassingly try to frame this as a win, despite not 2 days ago Pompeo refusing the same thing they're now pretending is their idea. Again, remember that every other member of the JCPOA is still involved right now and just reconfirmed that they are committed to this deal regardless of the U.S. stance. This next one coming from Anti-War, this one entitled EU. Iran nuclear deal issues not significant. Focus on saving deal, which is a big issue for the United States, as we've been seeing them aggressively strong-arming everyone they can to go against what they know is the reality of the situation, such as the IAEA, forcing them to have a meeting about what they already know they've investigated. And when the U.S. is not even part of the agreement, and they obliged, had the meeting, and they just said, okay, well, so we're still not changing our ideas. We're still going to stick with what the truth is. Sorry, U.S. And of course, they walked away unhappy with that. But this is the constant. And the EU in general is, regardless of how they may kind of flounder because they're afraid of the U.S. actions, are very, very clearly invested in the deal, have never left it, have always been on board with this. And now they're even saying that the issues that the U.S. and Israel are screaming about are, in fact, not significant, which that's the truth, by the way. I'm not really sure why the EU has decided to actually tell the truth in here, but it's clear, based on everything else we've been showing you, that this is in fact the truth, and now we're bolstered by even members of other governments. Now, the EU foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, has addressed the ongoing attempts to save the nuclear deal with Iran on Monday, saying that the EU doesn't intend to activate the dispute mechanism and is focusing on saving the deal through diplomacy. Now, we touched on this before. We touched on the dispute mechanism. And basically, it boils down to it's something that they can activate if they feel that the other side, it's essentially the either side, if they get accused of not abiding by the deal, which is what the U.S. is trying to activate by accusing them, even though they're not part of the deal anymore. But the point is they can activate this dispute mechanism, which then throws in this entire specific order of events where they can decide whether or not somebody's violating the deal. Now, Mogherini actually says that the Iranian non-compliance is not significant and isn't worth raising the matter. Now, understand that she said non-compliance. Didn't say that they broke the deal. And this is what's incredibly important. These words matter because breaching the deal after the U.S. pulled out and reinitiated sanctions, or rather breaching the percentage, is allowed within the deal. They didn't break the deal, but they breached the percentage that was set because they were allowed to within the pre-decided agreements that the U.S. pulled out. They reinitiated sanctions. So this is what happened. They're not in compliance with the original number, but it allowed this variable because of the U.S. actions, or rather anybody for that matter. If anybody else had pulled out and started initiating sanctions, it could have gone the same way. But that's what they're saying now. That non-compliance is not a big deal. It's not worth raising this matter over, which I find incredibly interesting, and I know it's going to be a huge point of issue for the Trump administration. Now, Iran has actually been wanting, surprisingly enough, to get into dispute resolution this mode for a while now, which shows you, as always, that they're not the one doing anything wrong, that they're actually wanting to trigger this dispute mechanism because they're going to say, look, we're not violating a deal, because that's the point. Once you get this out in the open, it'll make it even more clear to everybody that they're actually acting within the deal, which is what the U.S. does not want. So Iran's been saying, shoot, let's do it. But based on EU countries failing to deliver the promised sanctions relief is the whole point for them. That because the EU has not delivered its end of the deal, that they've actually wanted this dispute mechanism to happen. And because it has begun to legally breach the nuclear terms by enriching to 4.75% instead of 3.67, they're doing so just in a way to try to get the process moving, which again is still verifiably about 85.25% shy of even being able to enrich high-grade uranium, which is then needed to actually make a weapon. Quite a far shot away from nuclear weapons, as Pompeo and Netanyahu actually want you to think. But it's not significant. None of this is important because they're not actually doing anything wrong or dangerous. But all of the Israel and U.S. government manipulations in this story make it almost impossible and convoluted to really understand what we're looking at here. Now, I want to point out really quick on a side note, I've included this link in the show notes for you to watch, listen to, whatever. And this is about the idea of, this is specifically about Venezuela, as they call blue gold, coltan, and thorium. The idea of rare earth minerals, and thorium specifically. This video is interesting to think about, the idea that thorium has been a suppressed alternative nuclear energy for decades. An alternative nuclear energy that does not have byproducts, that does not have the, so basically at the end, to make it the simplest, you cannot make weapons from thorium, at least not nuclear weapons. And it's actually about zero negative side effects for the environment, minimal, I should say. So you may be asking, well, why the hell then aren't we using this? It's a good question. It turns out that it was actually suppressed by the U.S. government back in the 70s. Gee, I wonder why. Who wouldn't want a healthier, non-damaging environmental nuclear energy that doesn't cause byproducts to make weapons from? Who would want that? Everybody else in the world. Who wouldn't want that? Oh, that's right. The countries that have economic and military dominance today. The people that have control because they have all the weapons. That is the people that maintain the status quo. Just think about that. Watch this video, look into thorium, and understand that there's a reason that we are hung up on this very old, like the idea that we're still using coal and fossil fuels. And the reason is because they want us stuck in the same old way because they can control it, or rather they think they can. And it gives them the upper hand when it comes to weapons and control, as always. Now, in keeping back to the Iran story, and keeping the breaches, which is what they were, small and easily reversible, going from 3% to 4.5%. Iran has also made the issue too minor for the EU to even bother with, which is actually really smart. As well as doing so in ways they know are allowable under the deal due to U.S. actions. So despite the U.S. and Israeli efforts to, you know, muddle the story and make it look confusing and make it look like they're doing something wrong, at the end of the day, the EU is not willing to take action on it anyway because they know it's not. Now, U.S. officials have made a much bigger deal, of course, of the Iranian violations, as they're calling them. Ironically, since the U.S. has already dishonored and withdrawn from the nuclear deal, they no longer have access to the dispute mechanism. So it's too bad. They can't do it themselves. Looks like they shot themselves in the foot again, which is why they are drumming up all this fake news. And not just fake news, but fake, or rather, illegitimate legal action. For the next article, coming from Anti-War as well, this one shocked me, actually. Israel sues the European Union to try to block saving Iran nuclear deal. I mean, this really was confused. I mean, they're suing the European Union? I mean, how stupidly obvious is this? And as I put it in the title, which is exactly what it is, it sued them for not violating the deal. Because what Israel wants them to do is to remove from the deal. Because they claim Iran's not... They claim everything they claim, the European Union just came out, what I just read you a second ago. Everything that Israel and the U.S. is claiming, they just came out and said, no big deal. All those things you're concerned about, they're not significant. Which is a very nice way of saying that you're lying about all of it, right? But they're suing them for not removing themselves from the deal because Iran took actions that were allowed within the deal because the U.S. left. It's ridiculous and convoluted. But here they are suing them, and you're not going to believe why. Now, as the EU member is involved in the JCPOA, actually you're trying clearly to salvage the nuclear deal with Iran, one of the biggest obstacles has been providing the required sanctions relief that was promised under the deal. Seeing as how the U.S., who is no longer part of the deal, is the one going sanction crazy today. And regardless of whether the U.S. is a signatory or not, the deal requires that the EU provide sanctions relief. That was part of the original deal, and was for the U.S. as well when they were part of it. And in not doing so right now, even though it's U.S. sanctions, the EU is in fact right now in direct violation of the nuclear deal. Funny, probably wouldn't have heard that anywhere else on the mainstream media. It's actually the EU who's in fact violating the deal. Now, to circumvent U.S. threats, the EU has established a clearinghouse called INSTEX, which I've reported on, to allow trade with Iran without dealing with the banks, who are too afraid of the U.S. to finance any deals. And you see, this is an interesting point to make here. This is how people like Pompeo get away with claiming that things like medicine and food will get through their blockade and sanctions and all the different places they're doing them, when they know all too well that the institutions involved with facilitating that process, even if allowed to on the surface level, simply refuse. Knowing how easy it is to run afoul of a U.S. sanctions regime, which is all part of the plan. So at the end of the day, even if they're ostensibly allowed to, they simply don't. And then Pompeo can stand back and say, oh, well, yeah, they can send in food, medicine, it's all good. But then no one's willing to do it. He won't tell you that part. Knowing that Pompeo is just waiting to cast sanctions on somebody who just kind of accidentally runs afoul of their very ambiguous sanctions regime on anybody going against their agenda. It's frustrating. But it's something, again, that we need to come to terms with, specifically as Americans. Now, Israel is bound and determined to kill the deal. Laws and morals be damned, right? This has led to an Israeli NGO actually suing the European Union over INSTEX and trying to claim all Iranian assets in it, if any, should actually belong to Israelis who U.S. courts have awarded Iranian assets to. Now, I had to reread that. I mean, really think about what that's saying. Seizing Iranian assets in Europe based on U.S. court rulings as part of an effort to undermine EU attempts to save a nuclear deal with Iran that neither the U.S. or Israel are even party to. How is that even possible? What this shows you is how clearly the U.S. government sees itself as an international enforcement arm. That they can step over any other country because they're in charge. We have to recognize that. It's so overtly obvious that they feel like they can seize Iranian assets in Europe based on a ruling in the United States. There's no misunderstanding what that's saying. It's the same way that they can try to put Julian Assange in jail, someone who's not a U.S. citizen who did things that weren't in the United States. But here we are. I mean, this is crazy to me. We have the U.S. illegally casting sanctions and rulings about whatever they see fit to rule on Iran, that it has absolutely no authority to do. It makes wild, baseless claims that have yet to be proven to justify these actions. And now, based on this illegal move, it does not have authority to carry out. The U.S. government is ruling in U.S. courts on international affairs to give Iran's assets to Israel. To Israel. Why even Israel? Why does that even make sense? Why not give them to France? I mean, there's such a this whole thing is so obviously biased and so obviously corrupt. They're just saying, oh yeah, we're going to have some court in the United States rule on international affairs and say, yeah, you got to give all that stuff to Israel because we say so. Unbelievable. Now, of course, suing the European Union over Instex might just be a cynical way to tie that newly launched system up in a court and convince companies that the assets within Instex aren't secure and subject to being, you know, looted with lawsuits like Israel's doing right now. Unbelievable. I mean, and just the way that they're trying to hold this up with, I mean, if that's the case, if they're trying to use a lawsuit to actually hinder this process, it just shows you the fraudulent, dishonest nature in which they conduct their affairs. Now, it's important to remember that this entire Iran effort is being largely driven by Israeli foreign policy, which is not even secret anymore. As Trump himself openly said that the primary reasons for U.S. presence in the Middle East are to combat Iran and protect Israel. But considering that U.S. tax dollars and U.S. lives are being used, it should absolutely matter to every one of us how honorable we feel the intentions of the Israeli government are, or how honorable the intentions of any government truly are that are leading U.S. foreign policy. This next article coming from Middle East Monitor, Israel preparing for war with Iran, military wings in next 2 years. Good to know that they're already sure that's going to happen. Now, Israel's Minister of General Cooperation, Hanagbi, yesterday said that Israel is preparing for military confrontation with Iran and its military wings in the next 2 years. Now, it's important to recognize that saying end the military wings implies that this could take place anywhere where they say Iran is. Think about that. Not even needing to prove that, right? Because they just say, they say all kinds of things they never need to prove and just move forward anyway. Now, speaking to Israel Hayam, Hanagbi, who was also a member of Israel's security cabinet, said, quote, the possibility that there will be a military confrontation with Iran or its military arms is more likely, excuse me, then the possibility there will not be a war. Which is basically just saying it's most likely that we're going to get in a confrontation with Iran. But then he reiterated that the issue is not related to, quote, whether or not, but to the appropriate time. So then it follows that right up by saying it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, which is quite a different thing to say. Now, the minister claimed that the war with Iran, quote, has already moved from proxy war to direct war. Adding, quote, there will be a direct war between us and Iran. This is impossible to be avoided and will get fiercer through time. So see how this is kind of quickly escalating into maybe kind of possibly to it's absolutely going to happen and we're ready for it. All right. I mean, and discussing the reasons for war, Hanagbi said, quote, Israel will not continue to bear the price of no war. Let me just repeat that just in case you missed it. Direct quote from Hanagbi, who is the Minister of Regional Cooperation in Israel. He said, quote, Israel will not continue to bear the price of no war. What he goes on to say, which means giving a green light for Iranians to reposition themselves in Syria. We need to harm this reposition. Otherwise, we will have a terror kingdom on our borders. Now, forget for a moment the absolutely baseless claim of saying that they're a terror kingdom, which has not been proven by anybody. And in fact, decades of actually what they've done counter that claim. But ignoring that for a moment, think about what he just said there, that we will not continue to bear the price of not being in a war with Iran, which means giving a green light for Iran to what? Do what they're allowed to do in Syria. So basically what they're saying is that all of the negative repercussions we get from not being in a war right now with Iran, we're not going to take any further. We're not going to allow them to do what they're legally allowed to do in a allied country. And instead, we're going to prepare for war and make it happen. We have to see what they've just said right there. And this is exactly what they are always saying, and exactly what the U.S. government will aggressively try to tell you is not the truth. And you know, the best way to see whether or not the truth is simply do your own research. Now, for the last article of the day, again, simply touching on the idea of honor, morals, and whether or not we should be okay with this government leading our foreign policy. Israel detained over 2,750 Palestinians since the start of 2019. This is, democracy, freedom, right? Israeli occupation forces have detained 2,759 Palestinians during the first 6 months alone of this year, including 446 minors and 76 women. Now, the Prisoners Affairs Commission, the Palestinian Prisoner Society, and Adamir said in a joint statement that 5,500 Palestinians were right now being held in Israeli jails until June 30th, including 43 women and 220 minors, all being held in jail for no reason, no charge. Approximately 500 of these people were held in administrative detention without charge or trial. 7 have been on hunger strike for over a week right now, demanding an end to their illegal detention. Now, Israeli Prison Service, IPS, has taken punitive action against these people daring to strike, to hurt themselves in protest, against these striking prisoners who refuse to eat, including, denying them family visits, obstructing meetings with their lawyers, and transferring them to other prisons for daring to protest against their indefinite illegal detention. This is the reality of what this ally to the United States is actually all about. And every single day there is on and over examples just like this. I could have played 15 videos in a row to show you everything I'm always talking about, but I played them all in the past. But if you're interested to know more about what I'm talking about here, check out my other videos about what's going on with the government there. We're talking about the Israeli government. We're talking about the U.S. government, not the peoples of these countries. We're talking about the crimes of the governments and what they're committing and the deception around all of it by the ones that try to cover for their allies. It's incredibly important, and we cannot continue to allow this to carry on without pointing to it and saying what it truly is. Not being afraid of what will be called, not being afraid of the attacks coming from people who are constantly trying to cover for these crimes, but doing it because it's right, because it's moral, because it's the only thing we have left today with all of their political constant deceptions driving us against each other. Thank you so much for being here today. Please get this out there and spread the word. I'm going to end today with a tweet from Sarah Abdallah, actually from a couple weeks ago, but I thought it was incredibly perfect to finish off the show today. Reminder, Iran, unlike Israel, does not have nukes. Iran, unlike Israel, has signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran does not attack its neighbors. Israel routinely bombs Palestine and Syria and violates Lebanon's sovereignty. Iran fights ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Israel arms ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Which is all absolutely, completely, verifiably true, by the way. Important to recognize that stuff. I mean, this is all, and she links to a tweet of Netanyahu speaking about other people violating resolutions as they're violating countless resolutions and treaties right this moment. Thank you so much for being here. Please share the information and get this in front of people that might not otherwise see it. And if you'd like to support the channel, all the links are in the show notes to do so. We are 100% people funded from top to bottom. Thank you for being here today. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.